Welcome and thank you for joining us for today's IBM teleconference. New DB210 for ZOS beta security features help satisfy your auditors without impacting your production applications. Today's teleconference will last approximately 60 minutes and include a question and answer session and is also recorded. In this teleconference, you'll learn about the new controls and features and the planned expansion of DB210 for ZOS and data-centric security. The speaker for today's presentation is Jim Pickle, Senior Technical Staff, IBM Software Group. At this time, I would like to hand it over to our speaker, Mr. Jim Pickle.
Thanks. My name is Jim Pickle, and I'm the Security Architect for DB2 at the Silicon Valley Lab. Today, I'm going to introduce you to some of the new security features in DB210. Many of these features provide a data-centric security solution, allowing you to protect your data at the source, thus protecting all access and in many cases without impacting your production applications. Let's start with a standard disclaimer. Please go to slide 2. DB210 for ZOS beta was announced in February. The information provided in the webcast is provided for informational purposes only. No time frame is provided or inferred on when these features will become generally available. So let's start on slide 3. DB210 provides new ways to protect your company's number one asset and satisfy your auditor with minimum impact to your applications. Businesses have been protecting data from external users for many years, but because of new regulations, you are now required to protect data from internal or privileged users, such as users with the SysAdm or SysControl authority. DB210 provides new configurable system authorities to protect unauthorized access from even privileged administrators. Administrators can now do their job without exposure to data. Also, regulations require security administrators to be separate from data administrators. In the past, the only way to get the separation of duties was using RACF access control. In 10, DB2 access control can now provide similar capability. New auditing capabilities have been added through the use of audit policies. You can now dynamically start auditing on a table or tables in a schema without any DDL changes or rebinding applications. Also, you can now define an audit policy that would generate an audit trail of any users using one of the system authorities, such as who is using SysAdm or SysControl authority. New audit records are now written on every access to a table, not just the first access in a transaction. With new regulatory laws requiring historical data to be maintained over years, the problem is becoming more acute, requiring significant investment by DB2 customers in changing existing or creating new database applications to manage different versions of data. DB2 now provides a capability to specify table-level specifications to control the management of data based upon time, called temporal tables. DB2 provides a new data privacy mechanism called row and column access control, which provides privacy and security policies defined on a table. This allows all users accessing the same table as opposed to alternative views on a table, but restricts access to a table based on individual user permissions and masks as specified by a policy associated with a table. Let's now go into some details of each of these features. Next slide, slide 4, minimize the use of SysAdm. DB210 introduces 6 new system authorities to reduce the dependency of SysAdm and to control the implicit privileges needed by DBAs. By separating SysAdm into one or more granular authorities prevents a single user from having full control in DB2, so accidental or deliberate data exposure is more difficult to occur. First, a new installation security administrator called SecAdm has been added, which manages the overall DB2 security controls. In order to reduce the dependency of SysAdm, SysAdm privileges are divided into 3 new administrative authorities. The DB2 system administrator, called SystemDBAdm, which has implicit DDL privileges across all databases, a new data access authority, which has implicit access to all data, and new access control authority, which has implicit grant and revoke privileges. Two additional authorities are provided to allow an administrator, analyst, or programmer to have access to appropriate DB2 commands and functions needed to check SQL and monitor SQL performance without the ability to execute programs, access data, or perform DDL. These new authorities were developed in conjunction with the DB2LUW security team. These new authorities have the same syntax, semantics, and behavior, allowing security to be defined consistently across both products, so you can set up a common security model across all your platforms. Once you have moved to the new authorities, you can then prevent sysadm and syscontrol authorities from performing grants and revokes by setting the new separate security installation parameter. Once set, the new secadm authority is now the principal authority used to manage the security controls within DB2. Currently, if you revoke a privilege from a user, it causes the privilege to be revoked from other users dependent on the grant called cascading revoke. This behavior is not desirable in many customer shops and makes it difficult to migrate to the new authorities, especially when revoking sysadm. A new dependent privilege clause is added to the revoke statement. The dependent privilege clause can have a value of including dependent privileges or not including dependent privileges. Not including dependent privileges indicates the revocation of a privilege or an authority from an ID or a role, but will not revoke the grants made by that user, basically preventing cascade revoke from occurring. Including dependent privileges indicates the current behavior. Revoking a privilege or an authority from an ID also results in revoking the grants made by that user or cascade revokes. The default value is based on the authority being revoked and the new revoke dependency privileges system parameter, which can be used to prevent any revoke from cascading. The next chart will discuss the other two new authorities, the new SQL ADM authority and the explain authority. Next slide, slide 5. New authority for monitoring and tuning SQL without the ability to change or access data. The new SQL ADM authority allows the user to issue explain, SQL statements, profile commands, execute run stats, and modify statistics utilities on all user databases and perform actions involving the new explain privilege, which I'll talk about in the next slide, and the existing monitor to privilege. The SQL ADM authority allows the user to execute system-defined routines, stored procedures or functions, and any packages executed within the routine. This allows the site to customize the routines that are allowed to use by this new authority. Generally, all programs and functions are not executable by this authority. Only a user or role with secadm or access control authority can grant the SQL ADM authority. Again, it cannot access data, perform DDL, or execute user programs. It is used mainly to monitor and do performance tuning of the system. Next slide, slide 6. New privilege to validate SQL before moving to production without exposing user data. The new explain privilege to allow a user to check and explain SQL statements without the ability to execute those statements. Explain privilege allows the user to issue the SQL explain plan all statement without requiring privileges to execute that SQL statement. Also, it allows the user to issue SQL prepare and describe table statements without requiring privileges on the object or the ability to execute the statement. It allows the user to specify new bind options, explain only, and SQL error check, which allows you to populate the explain tables or perform SQL syntax checking without actually having privileges to the table or be able to execute those statements. So it allows explain information to be captured for dynamic SQL statements that have the special register explain mode set to explain without executing the statements. So this is a new special register that was also introduced in 10. Again, only a user or a role with the new secadm or the new access control authority can grant the explain privilege. Next slide. New audit policies provide needed flexibility and functionality. To better monitor your security plan and compliance, Improved auditing is being provided to better protect against and discover unknown or unacceptable behaviors to your DB2 subsystems. To assist in this task, DB2 provides a new audit capability based on audit policies and categories. This allows you the ability to configure and control different auditing policies that can be used to monitor both application and individual user access. An audit policy is a set of criteria that determines what categories are to be audited. Different audit policies can be defined based on the security needs of the business. An audit policy is created by inserting a row in the catalog table. The audit policy is then enabled by issuing the start trace command with the audit policy name. The audit policy can be disabled by issuing the stop trace command with the audit policy name. You manage audit policies in the DB2 catalog to audit privileged users, to audit SQL activity against the table, and to audit non-SQL users accessing DB2 through the distributed data facility. The next chart will go into more details on what is being provided. Slide 8, new audit policy features. An audit policy is a set of criteria that determines what categories are to be audited. Different audit policies can be defined based on the security needs of your business. An audit policy is created by a user with a new SecAdem authority by inserting a row in the sysibm.sysauditpolicies catalog table. The categories supported are checking, which generates audit records when access attempts are denied due to inadequate DB2 authorization, and for RACF authentication failures. Validate, which generates audit records when there is an assignment or change of authorization ID for a process. Object Mint, which generates audit records when altering or dropping tables. Execute, which generates new audit records for every SQL statement executed against a table or tables in a schema. Tables to be audited are specified when the audit policy is defined. This is an improvement over previous releases when an audit record is written only once per transaction. The next category is context, which generates audit records for the start of a utility, when a utility changes phases, and the end of a utility. SecMaint generates new trace records when granting or revoking privileges or administrative authorities. The two remaining categories are SysAdmin, which generates audit records when system administrative authority satisfies the privilege required to perform an operation. And DBAdmin generates audit records when a database administrative authority satisfies the privilege required to perform an operation. So this allows you to actually set up audit records, and DB2 will generate audit records when any administrator uses implicit privileges provided by any of the authorities. No audit records are generated when there is an explicit privilege granted to that user, even if they're running with these new administrative authorities. Next slide, slide 9. Additional security features improves the content of DB2's audit data. Auditing just the primary auth ID in many cases is not good enough to meet your auditor demands. DB2 adds the following new Z security features, providing additional synergy with DB2 and RACF, and improves the data that's being audited by DB2 and RACF. This includes supporting distributed identities introduced in ZOS version 1, release 11. Distributed identity filters are defined in RACF to create an association between a RACF user ID and one or more distributed user identities, as they are known to the application servers that run off-platform and are defined in usually distributed LDAP directories or registries. This strengthens DB2 auditing capability by allowing the audit record to contain the distributed identities that were authenticated off-platform or on the application servers. Support for RACF client digital certificates introduced in ZOS version 1 release 10, which uses the SSL Secure Handshake to accomplish a user's identification and authentication to DB2. A DB2 client driver can now present its certificate as identification and its proof of possession as authentication. This eliminates the need to manage and store passwords on your client drivers, so ZOS passwords don't have to be stored off-platform and secures them only on the ZOS platform. Support for password phrases, which was introduced in ZOS version 1 release 10, is being added. A password phrase is a character string made up of mixed case letters, numbers, and special characters, including blanks, and is between 9 to 100 characters long. It can be used instead of the traditional 8-character passwords. Just think how difficult it is to remember your 8 characters. Now you have to remember your 100-character passwords. So let's go and look at some of the new SQL access control features. Next slide, slide 10. New SQL access controls to protect against unplanned and all dynamic access. Today, DB2 administrators using the SysAdm Authority can access all user data. While their responsibilities are to manage and maintain objects in a database, in many cases, there is no business reason for them to see the data. When users access the data, they are subject only to the privilege checks granted on the table. But the privileges are not fine-grained enough to protect data subjects, personal and sensitive information within the table. The major consequence is the business cannot easily comply with data protection laws. In many cases, privacy and security policies are either implemented directly by applications or implemented via views. When enforcing policies using applications, the data is protected only when accessed via those applications. This hampers the ability to use ad hoc query tools or report generation tools. If views are used to implement policies, alternative views need to be created and managed for each group of individual users having different privileges. Because of the complexity and privacy of these security policies, it is often too great to express all permissions in a single view or a small set of views. So in DB2.10, DB2 provides a new mechanism called row and column access control, which designates the new security administrator, SecAdm, the ability to manage privacy and security policies for a table. It can restrict access to the table based upon individual user permissions and masks, columns as specified by a policy associated with the table. All users, including the administrators, are subject to these new access controls. Row and column access control takes the security logic out of the application logic, places the access control as close to the data as possible, and ensures the data is protected regardless of the tool used to access it. The evolution of security policies becomes very easy as row and column access control is data-centric and places the security logic in the database. Thus, all applications and tools that access the database automatically are subject to these controls. The next chart will show an example on how to set up these table access controls. Next slide, slide 11. New controls to protect access to individual rows. When a new row access control is enforced for a table, the rows of data are skipped unless one or more row access control permissions exist that allow access by user, group, or role. To implement row access control, DB2 includes a new type of object called a row permission. When column access control is enforced for a table, the max values for columns referenced in the outermost select list are returned. This slide gives you an example of the DDL used to create a row permission. A row permission expresses a row control rule for a specific table. It contains the rule in the form of an SQL search condition that describes under what conditions who can access the rows of data. The new create permission statement allows a user to create a row permission object. Multiple row permissions can be created for a table. The definition of a row permission can reference the user role or group in the search condition. When multiple permissions for a row access control are defined for a table, a row access control search condition is derived by application of the logical OR operator to the search condition in each enabled row permission. This row access control search condition is applied when the table is accessed. An application does not need to be aware of the row access control rules, and consequently, there is no need to change an application after row access control is in effect for a table. Let's go to the next slide on column access control. Slide 12, new controls to protect access to sensitive columns. To To implement column access control, a new type of object is defined, a column mask. A column mask is a database object that expresses a column access control rule for a specific column. It contains the rule in the form of an SQL case expression that describes under what condition who can receive the mask value returned for a column. The new create mask statement allows a user to create a column mask. Multiple column masks can be created for a table. One column can have one column mask only. The definition of a column mask can reference a user, role, or a group in the case expression. The case expression can then mask the column value before returning it to the application. The case expression can conditionally determine how the value should be returned depending on runtime or session attributes or conditions. Again, an application does not need to be aware of the column access control rules, and consequently there is no need to change an application after the column access control is in effect for a table. Next slide will show you how to apply the access control to a table. Slide 13. Define a column or row based on who is accessing the table. The following new scalar built-in functions are added to help you define your table access control policies. They are session user, used to return the primary ID associated with the process. This is the authenticated ID that is associated with the process. The current SQL ID, used to return the SQL ID associated with the process. Verify group for user, which returns a true if one ID associated with the process is the specified ID. Verify role for new user, returns a true if the process is associated with a specified role. You can use these built-in functions in your create mask or create permission statements. Once you define the table profiles, now you need to activate them. Next slide. Slide 14, row and column access control. Once the permissions or mask are created for a table, they must be activated for them to take effect. This slide provides an example of the syntax necessary to activate and then deactivate access controls. The activate row level access control clause imposes a default row permission with predicate of the form 1 equals 0 to all references to data in the table. With the use of the single clause, all access to data in the table is immediately restricted. No rows will be returned for any read access regardless of the SQL statement or the authority of the statement authorization ID. To allow specific users to access the data, you would need to define one or more row permission objects to specify search conditions to determine what rows can be accessed by what user. A row-level access control permission can only be defined, modified, or dropped by users having the new SecAdam authority. When row or column-level access control is enforced for a table, a row permission or a column mask is used to specify under what conditions a user, group, or row can access rows of the table or a column value of the table. No user has implicit exemption from these rules. This is true even for system authorities such as SysAdam. In fact, the ability to manage access control is vested solely with the SecAdam authority. Thus, you can rely on row and column access controls to ensure that administrators are no longer able to freely access all data in DB2. Now let's go through a simple example on how to set access controls on a table. Next slide, slide 15. Example, a simple banking scenario. To help you understand how to use permissions and masks, let me go through a very simple banking example. I have a table in which I want only the bank service representatives who need to see all customer data, but only with masked incomes. No one else can see any of the rows. Here are the column names and values for the table used in the example. A customer table with the customer's account, name, phone, income, and branch. Let's go to the next slide, slide 16. Let's say I want to set up a permission that prevents everyone from retrieving the rows except for the service representative. And then I want to mask the different incomes to three different values, 0, 1, 2, or 3. Next, in this example, all customer service representatives are in the CSR group. The next is the DDL used to create the permission, allowing only users in the CSR group, the customer service representatives, access to the rows of the table. No one else is allowed to see the rows. Now let's go to the next chart to show the DDL used to create the income mask. Slide 17. This slide shows the create mask for the customer income column. In this example, when income is greater than $150,000, then a value of 3 is returned. When income is greater than $75,000, then the income is returned as a value of 2. When income is greater than $25,000, then the income is masked to a value of 1. Otherwise, the income is set to a value of 0. So this is the example of the create mask. Let's go to the next slide to activate the permission and mask and see what DB2 does when activated. Slide 18. Here is the author statement to activate the access controls for the customer table. When this statement is issued, a default row is created, preventing all users except for users in the CSR group to retrieve the rows. Unless the user is in the CSR group, no rows will be returned. Once activated, all packages and cash statements that reference the customer table are invalidated. You will then need to rebind the packages, or DB2 will auto-bind the packages to pick up the new access controls. Let's go to the next chart to see when somebody queries the customer table. Slide 19, select account, name, income, phone from customer. When CSR Peter enters a query, he sees all the customers in the table, but the income column has been masked to show the values as determined by the mask. Anyone not in the CSR group entering the same query, even with select privilege on the table, will get a SQL code of plus 100. Indicating no rows in the table. Now let's go to the next slide to show how DB2 Optimizer applied the permission and mask to the query. Slide 20. The original statement is modified and references to the income column is replaced with the case statement to perform the where clause is added to the filter for the rows. So every mask column and every row permission, any query that references those columns or tables will have these statement revised and the query revised to this kind of format. Now let's look at DB2 new temporal table feature. Next slide. Problem of managing different versions of application data. For years, the application programmers and database administrators have been facing the problem of managing different versions of application data. With new regulatory and compliance laws requiring historical data to be maintained over many, many years, the problem is becoming more acute, requiring significant investment by DB2 customers to change existing or creating new applications just to manage different versions of data. Existing approaches to application-level versioning not only explodes the table design, but also adds complexity and error-prone code to the application. The lack of data versioning in DB2 prevents the protection and management of core business sensitive assets by DB2. DB2 provides the capability to specify table level specifications to control management of application data based upon time. Application programmers would be able to specify queries that specify a search condition based upon time that data existed. This function would simplify and reduce the cost of developing DB2 applications requiring data versioning and allow customers to meet new compliance laws faster and cheaper because DB2 automatically manages the different versions of data autonomically. The expectation is that select, insert, and update of current data would perform similar for tables not performing data versioning, but select of old data may be slower. Next slide, slide 22. New temporal tables allows DB2 to automatically maintain different versions. Temporal tables introduce the concept of a table being defined with temporal attributes. Temporal means of or pertaining to time. So with temporal tables, DB2 introduces the concept of periods. A period is basically an interval of time. DB2 uses two columns to indicate a period. The first column is the start value of a period, while the second column is the end value of a period. DB2 supports two built-in types of periods. The first is system time period. System time period is a system-maintained period in which DB2 keeps track of when a row is created and when a row is deleted from a table. To make system time valuable, a concept of versioning is introduced. Versioning specifies that old rows get archived into another table, so therefore it makes sense to have an end value of the system time period. DB2 calls the table that contains the current active row of a table the system period temporal table. DB2 calls the table that contains the archived old rows the history table. The second built-in period DB2 is supporting is called business time period. Business time period is a user-specified period in which users control what values are stored for a period. This business time period can be considered a period showing when a row is valid to the user. It has the property of modeling data in the present, past, and future, as the data values are controlled by the user. DB2 is also providing to have a unique index be created that will be unique over a period of time. Extensions to the update and delete statement will also provide capability to modify rows based upon the business time period. This new extension allows users to update, delete on a time criteria without having to be aware of how many rows represent that period of time. Putting the two built-in periods together in the same table gives a table that can be called bitemporal. This type of table can now keep user-based period information as well as system-based historical information. This gives the user a lot of flexibility in querying data based upon both periods of time. This should reduce the application complexity for applications that do this type of functionality. Now let's show how to define a temporal table. Next slide. Slide 23, defining system versioning on a table. This chart explains how to activate system versioning on a new or existing table. To create a temporal table with versioning enabled, you need to have the objects properly set up. Basically, another table must be created to be the history table. The system maintained base table must have a column defined as a timestamp for the start column of a system time period, a column defined as timestamp for the end column of a system time period, a system time period specified on the two above timestamp columns, in which the first column is the start column and the second column is the end column, which basically defines the system time period. And this uses the period definition. Then you need to create the history table with the same columns as the base table. Once you have the base and history table created, let's go to the next slide to show how to tie the two tables together to enable data versioning. Slide 24, add system versioning to a table. After the two objects are set up properly, an alter table add versioning can be issued in order to establish the versioning relationship. The alter table add versioning is specified on the base table that is to be versioned and not the history table. The history table is identified in the alter table add versioning statement through the history table clause. To query historical data, the table reference of the from clause is extended to specify that historical data is requested. When historical data is requested from a system maintained temporal table, DB2 will rewrite the user query to include the data from the history table with the union all operator. There are three system time clauses that can be specified to include history data in the query: the as of, the from clause, and the between clause. The second timestamp is not inclusive on the from clause and is inclusive on the between clause. Next slide, slide 25. System time period example. This slide provides an example on how to create a base and a history table with the appropriate required start, end, and transaction timestamps, as well as the period attribute to tie the base and history tables together. Once you've created the tables, then you can create an alter statement to add versioning. Then any update and insert to the base table automatically updates the history table. Now let's go through an example on what happens when a row is inserted and then updated, and how to query from a system versioning table to retrieve rows based on time. Next slide, slide 26. Insert system time example. When the row is added for policy ID A123, the insert syntax is identical to what would use if this was not a temporal table. Please note that the insert statement does not include any values for the three timestamp columns. They are not updatable and are managed by DB2. The values are supplied by DB2. The sysstart is the timestamp that defined is used to set up the current timestamp at which the insert occurred, and the sysend timestamp is set to the highest value for the timestamp. Since this is the first insert to the base table, there is nothing in the history table. Now let's go and look to see when the row is updated. Next slide, slide 27. Update system time example. Update system time example from the point of view of the pair of tables, temporal and history. No destructive data modifications are allowed for system time period support. When data is being logically modified by either an update or delete, the current image of the row is copied to the history table before the modification is made in the temporal table. The sysend value is modified in the history table to the DB2 current timestamp when the data was modified and the statement was executed. So this example shows what the base policy info table would look like and the history table. Next slide, slide 28, select system time example. Since system time automatically enforces no period overlaps and no period holds for a particular unique business key, a query with the for system time as of clause will return at most one row for a unique time. So you can see this select returns a row of A123 12,000, which is in the history table. So this may be a simple example, but I think you can see the power of this function and how easy it is to implement system time period and data versioning in DB210. Now let's look at business time temporal table. Next slide, slide 29. Adding a business period to a table. To enable processing of business time period values, a temporal table needs to be created or altered correctly. Once the business time period is established, then querying a business time can be done as well as updating and deleting based upon the period of time. Note that referential constraints can be specified on temporal tables with business time periods, but there is no support for having a referential constraint relationship across periods of time. The enforcement of uniqueness over a period of time is the important functionality delivered with temporal tables with business time periods. It is optional for a user to have a unique business time without overlaps. If none is specified, then overlaps in time can occur, and DB2 does not do any overlap checking. For business period, there is no history table. Business time is managed on the base table only. Next slide. Slide 30, business time period. To query a temporal table with a business time period, the table reference of the from clause is extended to specify that business time period is being requested. The from clause extension includes for business time as of, before business time from, and for business time between, and for business time from to. Please note the second expression is not inclusive when you use the for business time from to expression, and it is inclusive when you use the for business time between expressions. Now let's go to the next chart that shows the update and delete rules that make business time so useful. Slide 31, business time update and delete semantics. When temporal tables with business time period, the update and delete statement have been enhanced to allow updating and deleting based upon a period of time. There are also new clauses specified as follows for portion of business time from and to, and for business time from and to. The new update or delete clause will update or delete as usual if the row's period is totally contained in the period specified in the from and to clause. Whenever a row is not totally contained by these values, only the part of the row that is contained between the from and to clauses are updated or deleted. This may cause additional inserts of the rows into the table, as the original row needs to be split into multiple rows to contain the old values for the period that is not specified. Let's go through an example to help understand this new feature. Next slide. Slide 32. Here's a sample of the DDL to create and establish a business time for a table. The DDL provides the appropriate start, end, and period columns that can be created with an index to prevent overlaps. So this is the create table and the create unique index where you're setting up a business time without overlaps. Let's now show what happens if I update, delete, or query this business time temporal table. Next slide, slide 33. Business time period insert example. This insert adds a row to the temporal table. There's no history table for business time period, so there's no history in this example. So this insert adds a row to the temporal table for policy ID A123 effective from January 1st, 2008, which is inclusive to July 1st, 2008, which is not inclusive. Note that DB2 does not provide values for business start and business end for business period. These must be provided by the application. It's a period based on the application and the business. Therefore, the insert must provide those values. Let's go to the next slide where they insert a new row representing a different business period. Slide 34, business time period insert example. When this insert is issued, an additional business time series row is added to the temporal table for policy ID A123, effective from July 1st, 2008, which is inclusive to January 1st, 2009, which is not inclusive. Now let's go to the next slide, which shows what happens when you try to insert a row that spans more than one period. Insert business time example, slide 35. This insert is prevented by DB2. Since an index was defined on policy info with the business time without overlaps clause, the insert receives an error message and no row is added, since a new row would have created an overlapping period for policy A123. So DB2 would generate an error if you try to insert values that span periods. Next slide. Slide 36. Update business time example. Here we have an update policy info for portion of business time from June 1st to August 1st, where you're trying to set the coverage equal to 14,000 where policy ID equals A123. Let's see what happens when you update a policy. If the full portion of business time had exactly matched the periods of one of the rows in the table, a normal update would have occurred to that one row. Since in this case, the four portion of business time period overlap portions of both rows in the table, two new rows are needed for the non-updated portion of the period, and the other two rows are updated, including either their business start or business end columns. So in this case, two rows would be updated and two rows would be inserted to give the exact coverage based on the business start and business end. Next slide to show what happens when you delete from a temporal table using business time. Slide 37, delete business time example. Let's delete from policy info table for a portion of business time. If the for portion of business time had exactly matched the periods of one of the rows in the table, a standard or normal delete would have occurred for that one row. Since the for portion of business time period overlapped portions of rows in the table, two new rows are needed for the non-deleted portion of the periods. The original rows that were affected by the delete were deleted. So you see one row was inserted and two rows were deleted, so that you would have the coverage value based on that policy on when they were started, when it was inserted, and when the period ended. Now let's show how you can use the new business time clause to query policy info in the policy info table. Next slide, slide 38. Select business time example. When the select is issued for business time as of June 1st, 2008, the query matched both the business end of the first row and the business start of the second row, but only the second row is returned. Remember, the end dates and timestamps are not included in the periods for either business time or system time. Slide 39, a summary of the temporal table benefits. Benefits of temporal tables are system time provides an automatic management of the history table and provides the new system time clauses to query based on time. Benefits of business time prevents overlapping of time periods for business time and performs update and delete for the portion of the business time that does not exactly align with existing rows and provides new clauses to query the table based on business period. In fact, you can even put both these temporal tables together and create a bitemporal table. Let's now summarize and finish the presentation for this webcast. The final slide, slide 40. Summary helps satisfy your auditors using DB210. DB210 provides new granular authorities to satisfy your auditor by reducing the need of SysAdm and by providing new and more granular authorities to allow administrators to do their job without the risk of exposing data. DB210 improves auditing capability in order to satisfy your auditor by being able to generate more compliant audit records to meet today's compliance and data security laws. DB210 provides new access controls to allow you to establish policies on a table to protect all access to the data and to the table, even for ad hoc or dynamic SQL applications. DB210 provides temporal tables to satisfy your auditor requirements to maintain change and updated history on a table. Thank you, and now I will hand this back to the operator.
Thank you, Jim. We would now like to ask you to participate in a brief electronic survey. Right after the survey, we will have a Q&A session with the presenter. Your feedback is important to us, and we do appreciate the time you will take to answer these questions. To participate, simply press the star key followed by the number that best corresponds to your choice. Please listen to all the options before making your selection. Question 1. Please evaluate your level of satisfaction with today's teleconference. If it was high, press star 1. If it was medium, press star 2. If it was low, press star 3. And we'll pause for just a moment to allow everyone to signal. In just one moment, we're still receiving signals. Question 2. Was the level of technical information presented in this teleconference? If it was at the right level, press star 1. If it was not technical enough, press star 2. If it was more technical than I needed to hear, press star 3. And again, we'll pause for just a moment. Question 3. What version of DB2 for ZOS are you currently using? If version 9, press star 1. If version 8, press star 2. If version 7 or below, press star 3. And we'll pause for another moment. Question 4. Do you plan to upgrade in the next 6 months? If yes, press star 1. If no, press star 2. And we are still receiving signals at this time. Question 5. Would you like to join the world of DB2 for ZOS? If yes, press star 1. If no, press star 2. and we are still receiving signals. Question 6. We hope you have enjoyed the teleconference today. Please let us know if you are interested in receiving additional information or follow-up regarding the products discussed today. If yes, press star 1. If no info is desired at this time, press star 2. And we'll pause for another brief moment. And that concludes our survey. Thank you all for your participation. Now let's move on to your questions. To ask your question, please press the star key followed by the digit 1 on your touchtone telephone at any time. If you are using a speakerphone, please make sure that your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Once again, that is star 1 if you would like to ask a question. At this time, I'll turn the call over to Mr. Pickle while we wait for questions.
Thank you for listening to my presentation. I'm awaiting any questions that you may have on these new features.
And we do have some questions from the phone lines. We'll go first to Ronald Alterman, Fidelity Investments.
Yes, my question is, with the temporal tables, when a row is copied from the base table to the history table, is that done asynchronously or synchronously to the application?
It's synchronously with the execution of that update or insert. So it is a synchronous operation.
Does it perform better than a trigger, or is it about the same?
It is a little bit better because DB2 uses a system trigger, so it doesn't have to load anything. So relatively, it is faster, but not that significantly faster. You will definitely see the impact of having to do the history.
Okay, thank you.
And we'll go next to Peter Sooner, AXA Technology.
Hi, Jim.
Hey, Peter.
Please have you here. I've got a question. Well, let's start with the one on historization. When actually is historization triggered? So when actually does a row go over to the history table? Is it when you alter the table and activate the historization? Will that already trigger something?
No, it's when you alter and activate it. So you have to define the history table. Those are separate operations.
Yeah.
They really DB2
okay.
sees them as separate tables.
Yeah.
Until you alter and add the history. The
okay.
thing is, and then once that is done, then all rows would then start being moved to the history table.
Okay, so all qualifying rows will then immediately be moved to the historization table, or is that only during updates, or?
It's only done during update or
insert. Okay, fine. Thanks.
So if you're going to use an existing table and you have history data, then you would have to populate the history table,
right.
Alter and add, and that will then start, DB2 will start autonomically moving inserted or updated.
Okay. So this kind of initial work for moving existing historization to DB2 managed historization. Okay. Makes things clear.
And we'll go next to Walter Brumnell, HP.
Hello, Walter.
And Mr. Brumnell, your line is open. There we are. Okay, thank you. Please go ahead.
Hi, Jim.
Hello, Walter.
A long time since we worked together in that DB2 release too, huh? my question is... it seems that all these apply to AdRock and also static SQL. If so, I mean, is there any different assess path for assessing the historical data? Or how is this going to be handled?
Could you repeat the question as far as the historical data?
I was wondering if you have to access the historical data, is that going to be used the same access path or
you can access the table directly since it's an independent table, the history table. If you wanted to do any kind of queries, the auditor wanted to do queries on the history table, or you can use the base table or the temporal table using those clauses in SQL.
Okay. So be assessed independently. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay,
so they're only specified together if you use the temporal table with the new clauses.
Okay.
That allows you to manage each of those tables differently because the expectation is the history table would get larger quicker and you'll have to. So
yeah,
they're really separate tables.
I was considering if there was a case where DB2 has to decide when it's assessing the historical table or the base, the current one. So and the volume itself would be different. So that was I was wondering about the access path. But as you said, you assess it separately.
Yes.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
And we'll go next to Lawrence Jardine, Aetna.
Hi, I was trying to make sense of the slide on slide 36. And maybe I'm just looking at it too logically. It appears to me that the first and last rows were updated and the middle two rows were inserted.
So in this case, it really depends on how DB2 handles the situation. In this case, the DB2 updates the two rows and then inserts the two rows. But it's really...
I mean, the first row was, that was the original row with just a new business end date. And the last row was the same, the unoriginal row with a new start date. Right?
Yes.
I'm just trying to understand that. So to me, those were updates to the original rows. And the middle two rows are inserts that were created due to the update, the user entered update. Is that correct logically?
It all depends on how the DB2 handles the insert and update. This is my understanding how the optimizer would have done the inserts and updates. But I can see where you're thinking since more of the values on the updated ones could have been the inserted ones. It's really
right.
How DB2 manages the which row it inserts and which row it updates. So this is my understanding of how the rows would have been inserted and updated.
Okay, thanks.
And we'll take our next question from Trevor Hurt, IBM.
Hi there. I was wondering about the permissions on column and row security. Is there an interface so we can externalize this security? We currently have no DB2 internal security. It's all done for table and system privileges done externally in HDF2.
So could you repeat the question you mean by external security?
Well, we don't do grants anymore. It's all done using the external security package, HDF2, as opposed to RACF. So I'm wondering whether, and therefore we have a separate security administration team rather than the DBAs doing this work. I wondered if column and row level security could also be administered by the ACF2 RACF administrators without any need for any DB2 command.
Currently, since they're SQL oriented, they would be generally done by the somebody who's familiar with SQL, because you have the full power of SQL to define the policies and look at other tables. So the expectation is this would not be part of the access control. But there are existing vendor tools that are being generated that will allow you to set up an enterprise data security model and set up these policies transparent to DB2.
Okay. And if these tables are secured by an external security product such as RACF, you can still have these SQL permissions for columns and roll-up security.
Yes, yes. And since it's SQL-oriented, the expectation is that it will not be externalized through an external security manager, other than through tooling to allow you to set up these data policies transparently to DB2, and then the tool will generate the correct permissions and masks relative to your security policies and your data.
Okay, and I presume that's simply for the new audit privileges. They too are not externalized as yet.
In 10, they will be externalized. There will be new classes for each of those privileges for the new authorities. So they should work with the RATCAF controls.
Okay. Thank you.
And we'll go next to Rob Hogrand, Aetna.
I had questions as to the overhead for the security features. What's being experienced?
Relative to the auditing or the all three of those, access control or the temporal tables?
The access control.
For the auditing, the expectation is that you would use the exclude functions in our audit trace command, which would allow you to exclude some of your large batch or trusted connections where auditing is not needed, so you won't have impact to those. And so you would only turn on this auditing for dynamic or ad hoc or other kind of objects or packages that are not fully tested and trusted, so that you would only see a small amount of records for exceptions. So you basically filter it on the DB2 layer to minimize the generation of the audit records, because they can be large if you do it all audit records for all updates to your database. As far as the access controls, in some cases they can improve your performance if you're using the row filtering, because you would retrieve less rows, and so your queries could do that. But the expectation is that in most cases, if you have very simple access controls or column masks, you should see minimal impact. It's all relative to how expensive of queries that you put into these masks. As far as the temporal tables, the expectation is that if you had written an application, it would probably be more expensive than DB2, because DB2 has using system internal triggers. So they don't have to be read in the catalog or maintained in the catalog. So the expectation is you should see relatively faster performance than if you had written them in your application.
Okay, thank you.
And that appears to be all the questions that we have at this time. I'll turn the conference back over to you, Mr. Pickle.
Well, thank you very much for attending my webcast. And if you have any questions, you can email me at pickle@us.ibm.com. I appreciate it. Thank you.
And that concludes today's conference. We thank you for your participation.